Baker's dozen? Timeout. Because I don't know if that is it. It's either a Baker's dozen or is it 11?
You know, it's always funny because we're rolling and yet and still.
Oh,
I always get confused on whether
it's 11. It's 11.
Boom. I like it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 11 Zebra Stripes Podcast. I'm Coach Gene Clemens, joined as always by Coach Whit LaJure of Bridgen Academy. Coach Whit, how are you?
I'm doing well, trying to catch my breath in between rounds of the tournament, so getting ready for a big weekend.
Absolutely, and not to be lost, although we haven't talked a lot about the women's game. South Carolina marching back to the Final Four once again. LSU, a miraculous turnaround from last year with all the new pieces and Kim Mulkey over there at LSU. Iowa with the player that everybody thinks is the best player in the country. I think it's Aaliyah Boston, but I don't make those decisions. And I forget the fourth team now. It literally just left my head. But shout out to the ladies. It's been some really good games. It's interesting because this is one of those first years that you haven't seen chalk be so heavy in the women's game. I think it speaks to the parity. I remember 15 or 16 years ago, somebody asked Gino Auriemma if it was good, like it was good for the women's game that UConn kept winning. And I think his answer was, hey, get better. They have to get better. It's not our responsibility to get worse. They have to get better. And guess what? They've gotten better. And so that's the awesomes. It's great to see it. I still don't see anybody beating the overall number one South Carolina, but it is awesome to see representation from different schools that we haven't really seen in a while.
I told you last year I was going to study the women's game and get, at the same time and be ready for it. But I, like George Washington, I cannot tell a lie. And although I thought about it several times this year and was kind of hoping you wouldn't bring it up, I'm no more really versed in the women's game this year than I was last. And no slight to the women, because I watch the headline stories and all of that. But, the big story for me is that UConn, in fact, lost in the Sweet 16. So,
absolutely. They finally succumbed to something that a lot of teams have succumbed to, and that's too many injuries. I think when you lose superior talent, and you're not able to just continue to replace it, and then you add on to that these other teams who have all gotten infinitely better, it makes for a mortal UConn. I don't think this is the end of UConn, because I think, one healthy recruiting class and they're right back. But definitely, I think it's great for the women's game to see so many new representatives. Speaking of new representatives, the Final Four has a lot of people that you have not seen in the Final Four ever, should we say? Ever? Outside of one? Right. Yep. Outside of UConn, who I would say right now, if you took a poll if you looked at the Vegas odds, is probably the betting favorite. I'm not looking at the odds right now, but I'm assuming that UConn
heavy is favorite. Betting,
they're a heavy betting favorite right now. FAU.
Hey, they're a heavy favorite if you're not betting. They're just a consensus favorite. Not even close. Everybody's mind, almost a borderline lock. And what's interesting is, because the long shots involve these first timers, UConn has the pedigree to some degree, but historically speaking, they are not a blue blood. Now, they are a blue blood when you put it into the context of
championships.
Four championships and all of that. But interestingly enough, in this field, they certainly are the closest thing we got.
Yeah, it's interesting that coming from you, a basketball guy in the Northeast, you still don't consider UConn a blue blood.
Well, I consider them a major college power. I'm just telling you, you know, if we stick to the principles, like, hey, guess what? A blue blood is, you know, Kentucky, Carolina, UCLA, Kansas. There's only so many of them now. In today's world, right, everyone gets a prize, everyone gets a trophy. So now I guess anyone can be a blue blood, and Connecticut would be as good a case for being a blue blood as anyone. But, you know, if we're going to make them a blue blood, then we got to start making a lot of other people. You're watering down the definition.
So, and I don't want to argue with you long on this, but I definitely want to argue with you on this, because you just said we have to add a lot more. And I'm like, who? Because who has even out of the blue bloods, outside of when you take UCLA and you put UCLA to the side, who has a championship pedigree like UConn? Duke?
I'm distinguishing here between championship pedigree and major power, which I agree that they are, and blue blood in basketball, right? And
So help me understand, because I guess, like, if you weren't originally a blue blood, meaning like pre-integration, does that mean you can never be a blue blood? So is Duke not a blue blood?
Oh, you mean I would say, you know, basketball took off really with Magic and Bird. That's when college basketball exploded. That's the modern era. So, you know,
so 77, 78.
Yes, somewhere right. I mean, really to 79, I think, was that game, but the late 70s is when college basketball, for all intents and purposes, took off. No question about it.
Okay.
So that means that's the start, you know, Duke was good before Coach K got there. Sometimes people miss that. They had some very good teams, but nothing like what he went on and did, but you still raise a great point. Like, now wait a second. So if you're not a blue blood, you know, then you can't become one. I'm not sure.
Yeah, because I think if we're talking blue blood, like, or blue blood material, I think consistency in winning, right? Like, this program has become synonymous and consistent with winning. And winning tradition as an NCAA basketball team. So what UConn has been able to do under the tutelage of Jim Calhoun, and then the coaches who have come afterwards, this will be the third coach at UConn to win a national championship if UConn can get it done. And like you said, they're a heavy favorite to do so.
Is Georgetown a blue blood?
No. Georgetown has one championship, two maybe.
Right, but they are a transformative power and transformative agent of change in the modern game. Is Michigan a blue blood?
No.
Again, another transformative program. Right, well documented. Is Syracuse a blue blood?
No.
Right, another transformative program which we could study. So I'm just saying,
but none of them have the chips that UConn has. That's all I'm saying.
I hear you.
Even Villanova doesn't have the chips that UConn has.
Right. Right. So but they've certainly got a few lately.
Yeah. I think those teams you said would have an argument, but I don't think their argument's better than UConn's argument.
Yeah, I'm saying I have like it's not, it, to me, it's like the Baseball Writers Hall of Fame. Like, the, thus I'm keeping them out. Then I've either got to let them, I got to let more in, or I've got to keep them all out, because, you know, yeah, I'm going to give you some championships, but I'm going to give you reasons why the original Bloods created and what they do, they painted the landscape. They created the landscape of what college basketball is all about. But some of these programs I'm mentioning impacted in their very own way, including winning, the trajectory of college basketball. Again, UConn has simply, you know, won a couple of championships, which is good. I'm not, again, major power. So I'm making an argument. I'm all or nothing. I'm saying we got to let more in and call them Blue Bloods, or we got to stick to the definition and say, nope, there's only so many Blue Bloods. I'm good either way. But if you're going to let UConn in, then I'm going to make the case that you got to let Michigan in for their significance in the trajectory of the game. I think you got to let Georgetown in for what John Thompson did. I think you got to let Villanova in for sure, and I think you got to let Jim Boeheim and Syracuse in too, because they were a big part of ESPN and the whole changing the recruiting landscape of where kids are going to go to school and why and all of that. So there's my argument.
I mean, that's fair. And for anybody that's listening, if you hear background noise, I am at the Savannah, City of Savannah High School, All-Star game. So the All-Stars in Savannah, the girls and the boys are playing. The girls are actually playing right now. Some really talented young ladies out there in the marquee game. The boys will start afterwards. And so here, showing support and doing a little coverage of the game. So if you hear some kids in the background or some, you know, basketball noises in the background, that's what you hear. I'm willing to be okay if we're saying, hey, Mount Rushmore is never getting a new face on it. You know, like, if that's what we're saying, I'm cool with it. I'm just asking because by definition, Duke then is not a Blue Blood. Like, if we're going by this, you know, if that's the case, then when we were calling teams Blue Bloods like North Carolina and Kentucky and Kansas, Duke was not relevant at those
times. Well, I'm telling you, Duke was a lot more relevant in the college landscape, and I'd have to go see. There's certainly a Blue Blood in Tobacco Road, but Tobacco Road's been relevant for forever.
Absolutely.
And so, right. So I'm going to, you know, Duke's case, you know, might be slightly different.
So they may just get in because North Carolina's in, and they're actually attached to North Carolina. You can't tell the history of North Carolina.
Which they are, absolutely. Yeah, right. So yes,
that's a great argument. You can't tell the history of North Carolina without talking about Duke, and thus brings Duke into that Blue Blood conversation.
Yeah,
I like it. What else I like? I like the fact that you were super bullish on UConn coming into this tournament. Super bullish on UConn. You thought that UConn really had a chance to make a run, so much that I put UConn in my Final Four as well. And now you and I are some of the only people who have one team remaining in the Final Four since everybody's bracket got burst, and we have nobody that many people thought could win a championship in the Final Four. Miami has joined them there. San Diego State has joined them there. And then the Cinderella of Cinderellas, FAU, has joined them there. You were saying something off mic before we started the pod about, I think I was talking about it on, for anyone that doesn't know, Mark Madsen has been named the new head basketball coach at Stanford. He comes over from Utah Valley, and I was saying that's a steep jump to go from Utah Valley to Stanford. And you were saying something very interesting. Can you just fill the people in on what you were saying?
Yeah, if I got it right, I think I said, well, I mean, it's either yeah, might be a steep jump, or it's a steep jump that everyone, every coach in America needs to make given the outcome of this tournament and everybody's feel for this tournament, meaning that since it would appear that parity is real and we all know the marketplace is as fluid as ever, and Jimmy Larrañaga, Spanish Jim, as I say, because it's easier, that it's better than my, you know, than my Spanish, I guess. You know, that's going to put a lot of pressure on programs at every level. FAU, I mean, all these teams are going to put pressure on programs, rightfully to some degree, to not just simply make the tournament, but to make these runs. You know, the thing is wide open. So now, you know, I don't know, like when you go from Utah Valley to Stanford, it's, you know, I mean, you make the case. Number one, you know, it's okay. You're an All-American alum, so it's a great job, and I'm sure they pay more, and it's a great location, so you might want to live there. But other than that, who's to say what defines in reality the best jobs anymore? Now, again, if you define it by compensation and resources and, you know, opportunities to construct a program, I mean, certainly Power Five schools and all that are going to have an advantage. But if the landscape is what it seems to be, then if I'm any coach going anywhere, I'm trying to put a roster together that can compete to you know, make it to the Sweet 16, if not to the Final Four, et cetera, et cetera. And unfortunately, as a coach, you know, ADs are probably going to be bound to think a little bit like that. So now, you know, the old argument, coaches would get 4 years, sometimes five, and occasionally three, and coaches would, you know, obviously have strong feelings about how crazy that was sometimes. Now I think that window gets even shorter. Like, if they don't like what they're seeing instantly, they're going to say, well, wait a second, look at this guy and this guy and this guy, and look at all these programs that became contenders very quickly. So that was kind of the spirit of my comment, that, you know, the jump now from mid to high or low to, you know, it's not the same jump that it once was. And the expectations that go along with that jump are you know, they're different too, maybe.
I don't necessarily disagree with you. I do have a pushback, though, is because I don't believe that this is a sustainable thing. I think the super duper year is still in effect, and I'm interested to see what's going to happen after next season, which I believe is the last year of the. I might be off. It might be two more seasons, but we're coming to the end of that classification of kids who have the right to have an extra year on top of the extra year that they were already getting. And so it'll be interesting to see if things start to settle back down or not. But I remember last week when we were talking and you said, yeah, that's fine and dandy, but FAU didn't do this with a bunch of old people. So who knows?
And and experience is a big part. So I think your point's right, but I would tell you that the transfer portal is more significant, more impactful than, you know, the extra year. If they continue with this policy of not sitting out and all of that, then that is potentially more significant on all of what we're talking about than simply the extra year thing.
Here's the beauty of how the kids have used the not sitting out transfer and why I think it's so phenomenal. The kids have figured out that I can transfer one time, graduate in 3 years, and so then have the option to transfer again before I ever run out of eligibility. I think that is fantastic thought process on these I guarantee this is the law of unintended consequences. When they put these things in place, they were not thinking that these kids were smart. And that's to their disadvantage, obviously, not giving enough credit to these young men and them being able to maneuver around the ability to transfer multiple times in a career and not have to sit out. And so I really do applaud them for their ingenuity in those cases. I think it's actually been to the players' benefits, and it has helped to build parity back into the game. So in a way, probably not a bad thing for college basketball, although I can understand why some coaches might not like it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a sort of thing. I mean, coaches deal with whatever, you know, whatever the landscape is. So I honestly, like, if a coach is hurt by it, they might say they don't like it or this and that. And there may be some that really don't. I think coaches play by any set of rules or not that they're given. So, mm-hmm. I think most like it. I don't think more than not. Because it's just an opportunity to reshape your team. Is there a downside? Sure, we all know that. I'd push back against your point with the NCAA, and I don't know all this enough. I'd have to go do some serious research, but I have a feeling when they put this stuff in, it was more about legal, you know, legally stuff that made for unintended consequences in your terms. Like all this stuff happened, and you know, I don't think they were like, oh boy, we didn't see that coming. I don't even think that was under consideration. I think it was all legal maneuvering and what would hold up, and you know, so this is kind of the outcome of that. That's kind of what I think. And here's the last point I'd make about it, because I'm a supporter too. So I like the transfer portal, and I like the fact that it's adding all of this stuff. From a fan's perspective, we need to see after a few years. I kind of liken it to the NBA eligibility stuff with football and basketball and, you know, freedom of movement and how long you got to be in college and all that. So several years from now, when there's been enough time, like how many kids transferred and quote, like didn't make it, you know, like I've already talked to some coaches who had kids leave programs, go other places and not play. And had they stayed, you know, would have done whatever it is that they were doing, you know, or guy. Yeah. So guys that on multiple levels, cause it's happening now to, you know, every level of Division I, every type of institution, you know, so even elite academic schools are facing the fact that kids are leaving. And okay, so you're leaving elite academic school with no guarantees. Now you're not even going to get your degree from there, but it's also happening down to Division II and Division III level. So, okay. How many kids, and I don't know how you'd measure it, so I'm not sure, but how many kids ultimately are hurt by it in the same way that back in the day, you know, when who was it that went to the NBA right out of high school, the first guy to do it? Wasn't Moses, was it?
You mean like Sean Kemp or no, players well, like that? I mean,
I'm just Dolphin. Going back to when you didn't have to go. I'm trying to think of who the first one was, but for all the KG
phenomenon stuff, for sure.
Yeah, for all of those guys, right? You know, we don't hear and read about the guys that never A, got to college, and B, got a degree, and C, possibly did something with their life they might have done had they not simply pursued, you know, hoop dreams, so to speak. That's all. That's what I'm saying. To me, it has the same possibility where a kid throws away, because the most common reason you're transferring is, you know, it's some type of adversity. So here's another case where kids just don't have to fight through any type of adversity. Now, again, I like it. So don't get me wrong.
Yep.
I like it, but I think it's, potentially harmful. Let's just put it that way.
Absolutely. I want to spend the bulk of our time on the tournament, although this is a really great discussion, and I would just say, like, I agree with a lot of things that you said right there, except I think that I am on the side of being in favor of people making the wrong decision.
Allowing people to do it?
allow, yeah, like I'm with allowing people to make the wrong decision. Why should I be the one that forces a kid to go to college that never wanted to go to college in the first place and only went there because we made him go, or we made her go, when they could go to the NBA and guess what? Or not go to the NBA and spend 8-10 years bouncing around like Switzerland playing basketball. I don't feel bad for that person because that's the decision that they wanted to make. They're probably living in a better truth than a lot of people at their jobs that they're miserable in because they went to college and got a degree that forced them into a job that they can't find their way out of. So standpoint, I'm okay with it. Like, and if they become a disaster because of it, how many people have flamed out of law school and never made anything of themselves? How many people have flamed out of medical school, never made anything of themselves? They pursued a dream. That dream came up short and nobody said, hey, we got to stop these people from going to medical school. So we got to stop these people from going to play tennis. We got to stop these people from going to play golf. We got to stop these people from going to play soccer at 15 years old over in Argentina for their team, you know? So
I totally agree with you.
I'm obviously, as an education guy, I want to see people go and get an education. I also just think that college is dope and everybody should experience it, you know?
Right.
Like, it's just something that everyone should get an opportunity to do. But if they don't want to do it, by all means, let the people who have no other choice but to go to college go to college. That's cool.
Yeah.
Not only did we have UConn in our Final Four, but we were pretty darn high. We were pretty sure that we were going to see FAU in the Final Four. Yes. Last pod, I said, I just don't know. I think the FAU is playing with house money. They're very dangerous. And if they get past that first round, and then you were like, yeah, I think you talked them into it. And you were like, if they're going to get past that, we had both agreed they would not be afraid of whoever they saw in the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
And they clearly were not afraid.
Snowball going downhill. They just picked up steam.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And now FAU finds himself in the Final Four where Spanish Jim is. Jim Larrañaga, which I like to say, put that extra little squiggly line over the end, because when he gets in Spanish Jim bag, he's really, really good. Did I ever tell you? He came in and gave the graduation speech at Randolph-Macon Academy when I was there. The year that I was at RMA after I left Bridgeton, he came and gave the graduation speech that year. And his speech pretty much was all about like the run that they made at George Mason. But not a hint of Nyaga in his name at that time.
Right.
The way that he introduced himself, the way that he had people pronounce his name, it was never an N until he got to Miami. And you know what? I'm here for it. I appreciate it. Use whatever you can to endear yourself to the people, especially if you're going to make a final four run. How about this for law of unintended consequences, right? Miami and FAU making the Final Four is probably going to get the coaches at Florida, Miami and Florida State. I mean, Florida and Florida State fired.
Right.
It's probably going to get those two coaches fired.
It's definitely going to make the seat warmer.
I don't think it's going to make it. I think they're gone. I just don't think they could have done it this cycle. But I think next cycle they're gone. Unless they make a legitimate tournament run, you heard it here, season 2, episode 11, Zebra Stripes podcast. Stamp it right now. If Florida State or Florida, they do not make a Sweet 16 run next year, you will most likely see new head coaches in place at Florida and Florida State.
Leonard Hamilton's going to get the Jim Boeheim treatment.
Yeah, well, I mean, if we're being real about it, right, a lot of people have thought that Leonard Hamilton had some teams that could have made a run.
Yep.
So if he hasn't been able to make a run by now, with the amount of talent that he's brought through the door, then someone somewhere is going to say, well, is he the guy to get us over the hump? Right. Did he just build a program where it needs to be, and now somebody else needs to come and take it the next step?
Right.
Yep. I would also, by the way, be remiss if I didn't mention that Caleb Love has officially entered the transfer portal from North Carolina. I believe that Hubert Davis should enter that same transfer portal and go to North Carolina A&T or some, not A&T, actually, they have a really good coach. Go somewhere, North Carolina Aviation Technical School. No, he should just go hang out with the family since he loves his family so much. He should go away, because when your leading scorer or one of your leading scorers leaves your team, that says everything that we need to know about what you're doing as a coach.
But does that say – I heard today, I haven't confirmed it, but I heard Zach Edey's leaving Purdue. Does that mean my guy Matt Painter needs to step away to Purdue too? Now, I don't know if that's on the wire or not, but that blew me away.
I did not hear that, but that would be a foolish move on his part.
Boy, I think so too. So I don't know. I'm not making it up, but I don't know I saw it. Maybe it might have been. Hopefully it was. Oh yeah, hopefully it was some random fans like
BS. Is it maybe he's not leaving like to go somewhere else? Maybe he's just leaving because he wants to test and see if it's an NBA, like where his NBA stock is or something.
Well, it might be, but what I saw was, and I can't verify the source, but what I saw was transfer portal. I said,
"Holy moly, donut shop!"
Yeah, if that's the case, that's a whole another pop.
That's a completely different story. Wow. Yeah. Nope. That would be like a quarterback transferring away from Lincoln Riley. That would be like the starting quarterback at USC now, transferring away from the guy who's only had four starting quarterbacks in the NFL right now. He just keeps cranking them out. That I don't know. Right. Factors. People are here for our factors, our X factors. Last year we did this. We accurately predicted that Kansas would in fact win the national championship. Our factors come down to six. It's defense, offense, guard play, bigs, the bench, and the coach. We rank them 1 through 4. If it's a 1, that means that's the team with the best of that category. 4 means we believe that's the worst. And then we add up all of the numbers, and at the end, the team that has the least amount of points, that is the team that we think will win it all. Spoiler alert, this is probably not going to be that difficult to figure out who we like the best based off the numbers, if I am correct. Whit, I will let you start.
Yeah, and I just want to say again, like last year, and I haven't listened to the episode right. Well, I did listen to some of it, actually, just to review the factors. But, you know, I think we were sincerely not sure. It was a little wide open in the Final Four. And we said, hey, let's do this little thing. And we'll come up, and that's how we'll pick our – that's how we'll make our pick at this point, you know. And
yeah.
So we did our thing, and we predicted Kansas. We happened to be right. This year, what I guess, in addition to the spoiler alert, I think it'll be interesting to see if, in fact, what we suspect the numbers are going to be are backed up by, and the worst kept secret in the world that UConn's going to win this thing do the numbers support it? And then is it borne out or just as likely, and I'm sure we'll get to this, is there another, you know, is there one more chapter of this madness that is possible, which I would say already people are, you know, you might, might recall 85, right? It might be a Villanova Georgetown deal or NC State, right? Valvano 73, NC State, Phi Slamma Jamma, Houston, you know? So is there a big time upset?
St. John's still mad about that, by the way.
Yeah. So Saint anyway, hey, I'm ready to go. You kind of just roll it out. Tell me where you want to start. I'll give you a little bit of what I got.
Let's start at the top. Let's start with defense. I think I think defense is pretty easy. I think San Diego State has the best defense left in in the tournament. Yeah. If you look at their ability to hold good offensive teams to mediocre numbers, they make you play their game. I think that's part of why their defense is so good. But I think that they have the best defense for me, followed by Miami, UConn, and then FAU getting the fourth spot in defense. How do you have it?
Well, we agree on FAU at the four spot, and that's the only place we agree.
Okay.
I've got Connecticut at the top, and I got them at the top because maybe the fact that they've got to get through the Big East and play a whole, a little bit of different schedule, and the fact that I do think San Diego State's lack of offense is a significant contributor to the effectiveness of their defense. And it has to be, and all credit to them. So I gave San Diego State the two spot.
Okay.
And I know, right, that means they get a one and a two, right? Isn't that how we did it? So we take both our – okay. So I gave San Diego two, and I put Miami at the three.
All right. Now, next is offense. What do you have for offense?
I liked it how I'll go first this time. That's only fair because then we can alternate. I kind of like it. I've got Connecticut again, one. I've got Miami, two. I've got FAU, three. And obviously, as no surprise, San Diego State, four. So that's what I got. No explanation necessary, maybe.
Okay, so we both have UConn as one and San Diego State as two. I mean, as four. But I have FAU as two, and I have Miami as three. And I think for me, and you can tell me if you think I'm off, but I feel like FAU is more offensively consistent than Miami is. Miami has a real big streakiness about them. Like, if they get hot, they could be nuclear, but if they get cold, they can't find the rim for large stretches. And I feel like FAU just consistently puts the ball in the cup. At the end of the game, it might be a similar result, but I think that FAU, might have just a little bit more consistency on the offensive side of the ball.
And I wouldn't argue the point because I was flip-flopping between the two, and probably, depending on where you go with the next category, it might, my argument might take care of itself. So,
okay, so funny enough, because I just said that, right? For guard play, because that's our next category, guard play, I have Miami as one.
See, so now you see where I'm coming from.
Absolutely. I have Miami as a one.
That's okay.
I have UConn as two. I have FAU as three. I have San Diego State as four.
That is a wrap. That is one through four the way I got it, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Shout out to Miami and what they do with the ball. That I really like their guards. But they do have a little streakiness about them. Bigs.
It's a little bit of Villanova, a little bit of,
It's a lot of, I don't want to get us too far off base, but do you think a lot of people have kind of like just mimicked the Villanova model? Cause a lot of these teams, Kansas State had a lot of Villanova to them.
Well, they're smart. They do, That's what coaching is: mimic what wins. So,
by the way, how long do you think? Do you think that the Godfather's out for good, or you think he's point?
You broke up a little bit. So, who?
I said, do you think that the Godfather's out for good, or do you think he'll get the itch again after leaving Villanova, and we'll see Tony Wright back at some point?
Jay
Wright. Excuse me, not Tony Wright. Jay Wright.
Yeah, Tony Wright's also a great guy. Shout out to Tony Wright, former assistant to me in New York, an unbelievable guy. So, Tony, absolutely. If you're listening, in fact, I'll send you this episode. But I can't imagine.
What's up, Tony?
I can't imagine Jay Wright not coaching again, whether it's the pros,
he's
probably.
Too young.
But I'll tell you what, he's really good. Shout out to him. He's good at everything he does. So, he's really good on TV. And if that's what he really wants to do, then. Hey, you're good for the game there too. But boy, I can't. I'm not walking in the shoes, so I don't know. But I'm putting heavy money on the fact that he's coaching again. And I hope
right, we've got bigs up. You're up. What are your bigs looking like? I think we're going to probably be the same on this too.
Okay, well, we'll see. I've got Connecticut 1, no surprise. I've got San Diego State 2. I've got Miami 3 with FAU 4.
That's it. That's the way I have it. I have UConn. I think that this is where the I believe UConn has the biggest advantage over all the other teams. They have a legitimate guy that can put the ball in the cup.
Yeah, you know, but then they have a 7-foot freshman who comes in who, in the words of I think it was Jay Wright, but it was one of the color commentary guys after you know the stretch where Kling man, the big fella,
Kleiman, yeah,
went off, and he said, "My God, he's an NBA, you know, he's an NBA player. He's, you know, like he's the best running 7-footer freshman that I've seen." I'm quoting somebody, and I said, "Oh my goodness, God!" I mean, so now they've got two. I mean, that kid coming off the bench, which I again is a you know, not to get ahead of ourselves, but I like, yeah, he's good. So there, I get, that's a clear edge there. San Diego State, though, has enough to put up a fight. That's why they're a threat. Okay. You know, they will, just mash people at the rim. You know, Miami has the, you know, terrific one big, they play around Jay Wright style.
Mm-hmm.
And, FAU is well balanced. So anyway.
Yep. Now bench, I have UConn, obviously. Spoiler alert. I have UConn, I have San Diego State, I have FAU, and I have Miami for benches.
Yeah, so I mean, I have Connecticut again. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, because I think in theirs is dramatic. I'll tell you, I got FAU second because Dusty May is used to the bench. I mean, I think he's at least 9 deep, if not 10, and I mean liberally. So a big part, and I just think the question is, you know, is the bench going to hold up again for him? Is that going to be enough? You know, and again, because there's a little stylistic difference between FAU and San Diego State in that semifinal. Yep. So will his bench hold up? But it has been so far. So if it does, I, you know, whatever. I rate that as a strength. I've got Miami third, you know, and I've got, you know, that's a tie. I got Miami third, San Diego State fourth, and frankly, probably don't know enough about either to give one the edge over the other.
Well, I don't think Larrañaga's ever had like a really deep bench. I don't think he likes playing a ton of people. Right. So.
Exactly.
That's why I put him fourth. I just think philosophically he doesn't look at it that way.
No, I agree. So I again, we're back to like on the first one. That could be that's kind of a flip for me. So anyway.
Yep. So, This is a fun one for me because I've got Spanish Jim as one. How can you not, right? For me, Spanish Jim has proven pedigree. If you take George Mason and then Miami to the Final Four, like, come on. Like, what are we talking about here? Got Spanish Jim 1. I've got FAU 2. I think the guy's got magic in his fingers down there. I don't know how to explain it. I've got UConn 3. I've got San Diego State 4.
Well,
Spanish Jim.
We agree on Spanish Jim, baby. I got him as one also for the same reasons. I think that's good. I like your argument, and again, it's a close call. I gave Danny Hurley number 2.
You the gave apple the family fall, number 2.
The apple don't fall far from the tree. Dad is Hall of Famer, one of the few high school guys Hall of Fame, Bob Hurley Sr., St. Anthony's, everyone knows the story. But, I mean, what Danny's done, and you know, there's a great article, I think, in The Athletic on his rise and some of the struggles of being the son of Bob Hurley and younger brother to Bobby. And so there's some real you know, and it's not a boulder to the family, but there's some real prove it stuff going on with this one. And he's done a good job. Like, they were number one earlier, you know, when they were 14-0 out of the gate when I first said, hey, man, they're for real. Shame on me for not, you know, going to Vegas and betting a load on them because, you know, I should have. I for the same reasons, though, I got Dusty May 3, and I like your argument because he does have something special going on. I've met him and know him a little bit through recruiting. Told you against FDU, I think a lot of teams in his situation would have lost to what Tobin Anderson had going on. Dusty May, I thought, showed a lot of moxie, and so he's got his team in a good place. So I gave him 3, but if you wanted to, you know, no argument from me. And Dutcher, you know, I mean, guess what? He's Fab Five pedigree. Steve Fisher, he's got a little something to you know, he's got a little something of his own he wants to get done too. So I think this is a really interesting Final Four from a coach's perspective for people that like to look into that angle.
You know what? You know why I put San Diego State 4, and really I believe we're kind of splitting hairs here because all of these guys are great at what they do. But I really was hoping to see him improve on the design. And I haven't quite seen that yet. Like, what's the evolution? Because this is exactly what Fisher was doing at San Diego State. This style of play, you know, this kind of a gritty, you know, win it close, keep it down, keep the points low. Like, what's the evolution of it? Where do we take it to the next level? And that's what your successor is supposed to do, right? The guy is supposed to take it to the next level. I just haven't seen that out of San Diego State.
Yeah, I would, for the sake of argument, I disagree just to say, hey, listen, number one, a lot of guys that take over, you know, that, I mean, you worked with them 27 years, so you're going to, you know, you may tweak some things, but you're basically going to do a lot of the same stuff, and you don't, why fix what ain't broke? Number two, you know, taking the next level, they'll probably replace UCLA and USC in the Pac-12 next year. So San Diego State, he will be ushering them to the new level, if you will. Number three, when they took the job at San Diego State, they knew they weren't in a position to recruit the Fab Five like they were at Michigan, where you can literally do now. Now, again, in this conversation earlier, you might be able to work some magic now, right? These teams, I hadn't really even thought about that yet, but look at what these teams now are going to be able to do with the exposure they got in the tournament, right? That's what it's all about now. You do something in the tournament, boy, you don't need to do any marketing. You just did it all right there. So, you know, but my point is, at San Diego State, they had a fight. You know, there's nothing wrong with winning. You know, and that was, sometimes ADs get greedy. Al Skinner at BC, the worst thing Boston College ever did was get rid of Al Skinner. That was – they haven't recovered yet. Yeah, because there wasn't a next level. They were at a level. They were at a tournament level. In this environment, BC, Al Skinner would probably have them in the Final Four, for God's sake. He probably would. But they got freaking greedy, in my humble opinion, what I know. And so it cost them. So I'm saying, Sandy Dutcher, good for him. Took the reins, hard to do what he's hard to do what they've done at San Diego State, and they've done it.
That's fair, and like I said, I know it probably sounds like a diss, and I didn't really mean it that way, but because I think he's done a fantastic job over there. Like, you only have what you have, but interesting to watch the game within the game play out. I will say this: you get FAU UConn in the final. In the final, and that's going to be a great game to watch. I kind of want to see San Diego State UConn in the final. FAU UConn in the final.
Good transition. Let's talk about that for a second. But the first game again is the Battle of the Beach. That's what I'm built. You know, you got the Beach Boys, as FAU has been, you know, termed. I've heard. I kind of like that. Remember last pod, I didn't know whether slam dunk. I didn't know what the heck. I couldn't remember Florida Gulf Coast, but these guys are the Beach Boys. I kind of like it. Beach Boys are doing a Grammy special for some of the oldies out there. I've never a Beach Boy. Used to be one.
Yeah,
of the
I think that's why. I think that's why they're the Beach Boys, because FAU is right in the heart of old people world down in Florida. So that's kind of like a double entendre with them being on the beach and with it being a more like, you know, senior citizen area, that Boca Raton area. I think that's a great name. Whoever came up with it, kudos to them.
Well, again, they're kind of the Beach Boys. I mean, it's kind of a legendary band. But anyway, we got San Diego's not a bad beach either area. So, hey, let's I don't know what we do. I mean, have you tallied any numbers yet?
I have the numbers. You just tell me if you're ready.
Okay, I'm not quite ready. I'll say this. I think the San Diego State FAU that's a tough one. I hate, because again, if you go on emotion, and what we've been talking about is FAU winning that thing, and they'll have just enough to outlast them, and it's going to be really tight. And so I want to go there, but you know, something tells me San Diego State has the grind to just get them. So I think it's going to be a very close game. I'm going to defer to your expertise on this one. I'll tell you this. I look at the potential matchup, right? Because we're both not giving Miami, Spanish Gym, we're not giving them much of a chance, which is a story unto itself. Yep. But, I mean, I think FAU gets, destroyed by Connecticut, because it just gets out everything by them on both ends. And I have to see the numbers before I San Diego State maybe has that Villanova possession game, Villanova Georgetown possession game opportunity. I'm sorry going on so long. I'll say this. Working against Connecticut is the first time in both games, okay, or the first game and then the second, where they'll face the negative pressure. This is the first time they're going to face the kind of negative pressure that some of these other top programs have faced. Because, again, everyone's got them winning, including you and me. And this is the first time they're going to feel that. Like, oh, boy.
They're going to feel like the favorite.
It's the first time, because that when they started losing and had their kind of not reinvent themselves, but just get it going again. You know, they get on that road and it feels good, but this they're going to feel real pressure. And Miami's not. I mean, they're just not. So do I give Miami much of a chance of an upset? I don't, but I'll tell you what, you said it. Oh boy, Spanish Jim now. He's got a bag, man. He's got a deck of cards with all sorts of freaking jokers in it. Don't bet against that dude.
You and the bag man thing is hilarious to me. It's interesting though. I think UConn's going to win that game with Miami. I think they just have too much. They'll overwhelm them eventually. Okay. With FAU and San Diego State, I'm just torn. I think that FAU may just be able to make a couple of shots. That might just be all it takes. Is to just get a couple of shots. If FAU gets in a position where they can get up 6-7 points on San Diego State, can San Diego State run down a 7-point lead late? I don't know. I mean, they've played tough. We'll see.
I'm gonna roll with you again on FAU making it to the making it to the.
I do think you know the clock strikes midnight on them in the final. Versus UConn, but man, that's going to be one of those games where all of the casuals will be out watching. Because if FAU wins a national title, heads are going to explode.
We will watch UConn. I mean, we are going to watch the ultimate in managing expectations and pressure and
absolutely
all of that. So and that's what makes it so great. So let's see what the number, let's see what the numbers say.
Let's see what the numbers say. So we tallied up all of the numbers, and we will say UConn is an overwhelming choice. They have a total of 17 points, which to put it in perspective is 8 points less than our number two team, Miami, at 25 points. But here's where it gets interesting. San Diego State, 38 points. FAU, 39.
Okay.
So we're saying that this is a coin flip game.
That's a, and we're also saying that, like, and we're not the only one saying it. We're saying that the semifinal with Miami and UConn is actually the championship.
That's game, the championship
which is,
game,
which is going to feed into the narrative that, you know, the winner
all
of
the pressure.
Of, yeah,
all the pressure the will be on you in the championship. Whoever comes 100%. Out of that game, you're expected yep. to hoist the trophy. You're yep. dead right.
You so, know, so I thought about coming on here and saying, "Now I'm going to go with." So let's just say, you know, yeah, okay, I'm UConn's going to win it, but you know what? Anyone, yeah, we both know enough to know that I wouldn't count out either of the teams on the other side of the bracket.
Absolutely not. Like, you can't count out Spanish Gym, and
no.
you know, with Sandy, they've made it far enough, and they've gone through enough quality opponents to say they could beat UConn. Like, they.
Yep.
They have enough on their plate now to say that they could beat UConn. The interesting thing will be Vegas and what these lines are at.
Yeah.
Does UConn, if UConn gets it done versus Miami, do they open up as a double-digit favorite in the championship game?
Right.
And if so, how do you take double digits? Like, right. how do you take it? And do you just give it because they've been so – It's if they look dominant yeah. versus Miami, expect a double digit right. spread in the championship game on Monday. Now the question for us is, do we come back in pre-championship or do we just ride it out and we talk to the people after the championship game?
I think we add in Baker's. I think we add in episode 12 Rip and run 20 minutes.
I like it because we were supposed to rip and run 45 today, and we had some really good conversations, like some good topics.
I was in a talkative mood. I'm sorry.
No, it was fantastic. There's some stories, there's some discussions I want to get back to, and I hope I don't forget them so we come back to them again. But ladies and gentlemen, that is our NCAA tournament recap. We have our Final Four champion. Our prediction is UConn gets it done. Look out for a quick fast break before the championship game on Monday. UConn is our odds-on favorite. Miami is our second in our confidence pick, and San Diego State is third. FAU is fourth, but it's a one-point difference between those two. So look for that game to be a close coin flip. Look for a pretty comfortable win, I would say, for UConn over Miami. Not something crazy, but, you know, a comfortable win for UConn if they come to play like they've been playing thus far.
I think they'll win by 10 points or so, which is a little bit less than what they did. And again, even though we do have the rankings, we've got FAU down. We both are rolling with FAU. So we're going to let the numbers say one thing. But, yeah, it's a coin.
We're going against our own numbers.
We're going against the numbers in this case. We're going against the nerd. We're going against the nerds.
Absolutely. We're going against ourselves, which are the nerds. That's great. Ladies and gentlemen, that's another episode of Zebra Sites Podcast. I am Coach Gene Clemens. As always, make sure that you subscribe to the channel wherever you get your DSPs from. You can find us on, you can find us everywhere, anywhere that you get a podcast from. Make sure that you stay tuned for that special episode. We'll definitely drop some jewels if we get that to you. But when we get that to you before the Final Four, before the championship game, for Coach Witt, I'm Coach Gene Clemens. Until next time, peace.